Welcome to the Andy Social Podcast. My name is Andy, and welcome. If this is your first time listening to the Andy Social Podcast, I really hope that you enjoy this episode, and in a way, I hope it's like a door that's being jarred open by your foot. You've jammed your toe in there, and as a result, you pry that door open, and this flooding obsession for the Andy Social Podcast comes flowing in, and you just want to go back, and you want to listen to episode one, and listen to, well, actually, maybe not episode one, because that's pretty bad, but go back to the start and listen to all the Andy Social Podcast episodes right up till now. Maybe not go to that extreme, but I really hope that you enjoy this episode and you do go back and listen to some of the previous guests that I've had on. I've been really lucky to talk to lots of different people from all walks of life, whether it be musicians, podcasters, pilots, pirates, professors, TV hosts, comedians, you name it, I've had them on. And I've said it in the past, that list continues to grow each and every week. And I've got another person to add to my ever-expanding list. And his name is Dave Gertler. So Dave is the founder of Castaway, the Australian Podcast Awards. And I've known Dave for a little while now, not for a long time, but Dave popped up on some of the social media channels asking a lot of questions to Australian podcasters and being very curious. And as a result, or what that led to was this concept that he's developed called Castaway, the Australian Podcast Awards. And 12 months of sweat, pain, tears, not necessarily in that order, has led to the first ever Australian Podcast Awards night that was held on the 1st of April of this year. Dave had Tim Reed of the Small Business Big Marketing podcast MC the night. He also had DJ Maynard on the red carpet interviewing some of the Australian podcasters and doing a bit of video work there. So that was really cool. And Jess and I went along, and it was, to be honest, one of the best awards nights I've ever been to. And I've been to a few now, and there was just such a relaxed, casual atmosphere, but very well planned. Everything was set up in a very streamlined way. And there was this vibe that was this encouragement to network there. And I met a lot of great people there on the night. And one of the amazing things with podcasting for me, especially coming from that musician background and playing in a band for 10 plus years, is that a lot of those skills of networking and collaborating with people can be translated into the podcast community. And I've done that over the last couple of years of running this podcast, where you meet up with people that run their own podcasts, you appear on each other's podcasts, you do the swap cast, you collaborate, you do cross promotion. And it's just great to work alongside of so many other people that do so many amazing things. And David is pushing really hard to make Australian podcasting bigger. And we sort of pale in comparison to our American friends. Podcasting over there is huge. But we're on the rise here, and it's getting bigger and better. And for many years, the ABC almost owned the word podcasting. But as you'll hear in our conversation, it's becoming bigger and better in Australia, with a lot of people, independents, as well as people from all ranges of industry, picking up this medium and having great success with it. So I'll leave it at that. Let's just dive in. Let's talk about the podcast this year, the podcast awards, and we'll also talk about what next year is going to look like as well. A lot of cool chat. Also, a shout out to Dave's dog, Chachi, who was very kind to interrupt every once in a while and give some feedback as well. So enjoy this episode with Dave. I'll put all the links to andysocial.net if you want to reach out to Dave and say hello. But please enjoy this episode with David Gertler.
I just got back from Melbourne yesterday. I was a little bit sick, so I'm just sort of keeping an eye on my health today.
Have you got another week in Melbourne ahead, or
no? I'm back in Sydney now.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, so no immediate travel anyway, which is good.
Yeah, it is. I do like traveling, but I guess after the Castaway Awards, and then all of a sudden I was sort of asked to do a job that's going to take me 3 months, and I have a week of training in Melbourne. I still feel like I have stuff to do with the Castaway Awards, and I do have stuff to kind of finish off. So I haven't really had a break, kind of thing. But, you know, getting sick is a good break because you can say, oh, I'm sick, I can't anything.
You're sort of forced, even just to convince yourself to slow down.
Yeah. You can pick and choose these things, Dave. You're sick.
Is it the man flu?
It's some kind of flu. Yeah. I think so. I guess I am a man, so
all right,
it must be a man flu.
It's diagnosed. Don't worry, I get that often. So, like everybody, I do heaps of internet stalking.
Yeah.
Gets to quite a creepy level. Mm-hmm. But more or less, I just looked on your LinkedIn profile.
Okay.
And I was pretty, I was impressed and quite intrigued with, I guess, your background. And I will get to like the Castaway Awards and Australian podcasts and whatnot. But I think it all sort of links in together because a lot of your background is in digital, as in recently, as far as you've got like marketing background, community management, graphic design, web design.
Yeah.
It's a bit of everything. I don't know exactly what you do for a job, but you seem to have a lot of, I mean, background-wise, there seems to be a lot of that.
Yeah, I do the community management stuff. That's my bread and butter.
Yeah.
Social media community management. I've been doing that for the last about year, I guess.
Yeah.
And that sort of sprung from natively just spending a lot of time on social media over the years. It sort of has been a common thread through a lot of things I've done, like in the podcasting space. I've been very active on social media in the tennis podcasting world. I've also sort of been very interactive on Twitter. There's a very strong Twitter community around the sport of tennis. And, at one point I just thought, well, I should sort of pivot my career around this natural inclination that I have towards spending time on social media.
Mm.
And I hooked up with this great agency that places me in different companies that are looking for people to manage their social media. And that's what I'm doing.
So like now. On a contract basis?
Yeah. A lot of it's from home, and a lot of that working from home over the last 6 months or so was really conducive to being able to organize the Castaway Awards as well, because the shifts weren't too demanding in terms of the amount of time that I was in front of a computer, and I could sort of think of things and make lists and then quickly just get to action on the Castaway stuff.
Yeah.
Rather than be stuck at a 9-to-5 job for 5 days a week and just be kind of prevented from sending important emails and just all the stuff that I needed to do to make it all happen.
It's something that I'm seeing more often now, where I think businesses are being a little bit more relaxed and flexible with that whole working from home arrangement, especially, well, for you in the type of work that you do, you don't need to be in an office at all. But I think for a lot of other industries, it's certainly a lot more accepted now, because I know for years and years, I think it was more of an importance just to have presence in the office than sitting at a desk. You're almost chained to it. Mm. Whether you're actually being productive or not was secondary. But I think now people are understanding you probably get a lot more productive value out of people if you let them sort of have a bit of flexibility.
That,
in some cases, anyway.
In some cases, yeah, to a degree. But I would say that after having done a lot of stuff from home for the last 6 months to a year from my previous job as well, that was a lot of working from home in the end as well. But I don't know. I don't know if it's so much about the motivation or the discipline to make sure you get stuff done. But for me, I'm really enjoying the current placement where I'm going to be sitting in an office.
Yep.
Because I'm learning the ropes about this company that I'm working for, and there's a lot to learn. And it just helps to be able to just tap on someone's shoulder and just say, "Hey, can you just explain what this thing means and why you guys do this?" And whereas when you're at home, you kind of just have to piece that stuff together yourself or put it in an email and wait.
Yeah. You don't have that connection with people as such. Like, it's a bit more, there's a bit of a colder connection. Whereas if you're there in the same office together, you build a bit more rapport. And I think people are probably a little bit more open to helping as well, as opposed to an email where you got lack of tone and people, depending on the mood of the person that's reading it, they'll read it in a certain way.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I've noticed that I did think that I was more of a lone wolf type, not lone wolf, but that's now got terrorist kind of connotations. But I did think I was like someone who enjoyed the solitude and being able to kind of work by myself. But after the Castaway Awards, towards the end of that, I've sort of come through the other end, and I now feel very much like, even though there's some work that I do well by myself, it's really, really great to have other people helping.
Yeah.
And just to have that community feeling of like we're all kind of creating a better good together.
It's probably that balance, isn't it? Because I think in certain aspects or scenarios, being on your own without the distraction and the noise and being able to sort of have a bit more control over the workflow and whatnot would probably be quite beneficial. You'd probably get a lot done. But then on the flip side, having that sort of social interaction and being able to lean on people and learn and have even like, not so much a mentor, so to speak, but having other people around you that are more experienced that you can leverage off.
Exactly.
Would also help. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. So speaking about the Castaway Awards, and looking at your background and some of the skills that you got on LinkedIn, I was quite intrigued to find out how some of these skills have had to be applied into the preparation, even just coming up with the concept and moving from the concept to, I guess, not the final result, because it's an ongoing thing, but I guess the final result in this aspect being the awards night itself. Mm. So one of them, and you mentioned about community management being social media.
That's been super important with Castaway.
And I've noticed it from my perspective, because you popped up quite a bit before even the idea was being spoken about as far as Castaway and the podcast awards. And then after a while, then you're collecting contact details, and then these emails started going out. Mm. And it's like, oh, this is interesting. And then over time, gradually, I guess, building awareness around what the concept was. Was there a strategy in mind as far as how you're going to do it, or did you just try and, I guess, piece it together as you went?
It's a tough one. It's so much. There's so much in that, because, like, the whole thing evolved in a way on social media. There was a period of time where I was toying around with the idea of just doing something in the podcasting space and trying to be some kind of community leader or start an organization or an endeavor. But I wasn't sure what it was. So my starting point was just to create a survey, and it was about what people like about podcasts. And I just sort of circulated that survey as widely as I could. And that got me really thinking about what is it that makes a good podcast. And eventually at some point I thought, I had a moment where I heard about this awards ceremony that happens in the States for podcasting called the Sarahs. And then I was like, oh, that's what this is all coming together as. You're going to make a podcast awards for Australia, of course. So, and then the other part of, so it kind of evolved through workshopping ideas with people and seeing what their responses were in these surveys. That's the concept of Castaway came together like that. But in terms of community management, I have definitely been practicing what I understand to be best practices in terms of encouraging people to participate in what I'm doing. Mm. Ultimately, I'll be honest as well, ultimately, the people who came to the event essentially on one level are customers.
Mm.
So at one point I had to just think to myself, well, even though you've been asked this particular question, you know, you feel like you've been asked it like 8 times in the last 2 days, and you've answered it to everyone and you've put it on your website and you've done a newsletter about it. You still have to be super, super nice to this person who's just asked the same question as if they're the first person to think of it. Because, like, yeah, ultimately you're a business, and what you're doing won't succeed unless you adopt certain principles.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want one angry customer that starts to badmouth the whole thing, and then that
Look, I think I've got that as well. but the important thing to me is knowing that I'm doing everything that I can do within my, within reason to do a good job of what I'm doing.
You mentioned about the best practices of, I guess, getting people or encouraging people to participate or become involved in some way or another, I guess, whether it's submissions to nominations for the podcast awards themselves or filling out surveys or whatever it might be. Is there anything in particular that you really focused on as far as best practices, especially coming from that community management background? Is there a technique there that you use, or is it more of a case of just connecting with as many people one-on-one as possible?
Well, community management-wise, it was just about responding to anyone who was interacting with me and rewarding them, I guess, by being as interactive as I could.
Mm.
Retweets, quoted tweets, faving.
Yeah.
Responding to DMs, responding to PMs on Facebook, checking notifications on Facebook, making sure that anyone who's taking time out of their day to make me feel a little bit involved in their lives, that the brand that I'm creating is giving back to them in that sense. But from a less community management point of view and more in terms of social media marketing, there were a few times when I realized that I need to harness the power of the community more so than just pushing stuff out myself. It's about pushing stuff out that's going to encourage people to share with other people.
Yeah.
There was a little graphic that I created with the help of my graphics team. When people were actually entering the awards, I asked them to build me a template that used the Castaway wavy lines, signature wavy lines graphic, and I could just insert the artwork of three different podcasts, and it had a message saying, thanks for entering the Castaway Awards.
Yep.
So I think I did that with the Antisocial podcast. There was a point at which I stopped doing it because I got too busy, but it was a great way to pop up on people's social media feeds and for them to see, oh, wow. Oh, they've created a graphic with my podcast artwork. It looks really good. And I'm like next to this famous podcaster who I didn't know that they were entering the awards as well.
Hmm.
And I'll retweet that. I'll share that and like give them those sorts of things so that they can promote themselves and you at the same time.
And it's almost, it's an indirect way instead of just going, hey, can you just share this around? Can you like this? Can you comment on this or tag people in this? Because as soon as you do that, and I've fallen victim to this over the years, like playing in doing music and in a band where you're trying to just get people to do something that you think's pretty simple, just like clicking one button, but it's extremely hard to actually get them to follow through and do it. But your indirect approach of actually having something that is a benefit to that person, so they're actually compelled. It's like a viral video. You know, you want to be out, you want to share it, you want to do something, and no one's actually telling you to do it. You're just doing it on your own accord. But there's obviously a bit of strategy behind it. So it's
these are the things that I learned along the way. And it's probably just basic marketing 101. But along the way of the Castaway Awards, I found myself having these epiphanies. I was like, did you know that if you like give people something that they want to share, it, you know, they'll share it and they'll promote your brand. And like, I'm like having this moment of like, oh my God, I just figured this thing out. And people who are like experienced in marketing are like, Dave, it's actually really basic marketing, but
yeah, you should know that.
Golf clap. but another thing that, you know, and I don't know if I want to go into the popular vote as much, but the popular vote was a bit of that concept amplified, because to be honest, the principle, like for a long time, what was driving Castaway, and from the very early stages, like we were talking about before, when I first announced that I was doing the Castaway Awards, it really, I realized that the strength in what I'm doing is the participation of the podcasters.
Yep.
It all comes back to, you know, people will throw ideas at you about how you should promote yourself.
Yeah.
But if you're doing this kind of thing, you need to always be listening to the core community, and that is the podcasters.
That's your crowdfunding in a way.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And for a long time, I was 100% planning on doing crowdfunding for the Castaway Awards.
Yep.
I went along to possible meetings on how to crowdfund. I had a whole list of prizes that I would, like rewards that I was going to do. It was only in the 11th hour that someone that was helping me with marketing a lot said, hold on, like, this is an awards ceremony. It's an event. You don't crowdfund these sorts of things. It's something that people buy a ticket to.
Yeah.
And that's another tangent. But what I was saying was the importance in what I'm doing is getting the enthusiasm and the participation of the podcast community.
Yeah.
It starts and ends with that. If I don't have people's throwing their support and enthusiasm behind what I'm doing, then it's going to fail and it's pointless.
Yeah.
So submission numbers were kind of, people were taking the deadline a bit too literally. They were like, yes, you know, I'm going to enter the awards just, and I knew that they were only going to do it like the day before. So I created a, long story short, I knew that this would happen. I created a popular vote because I knew that people, even though this isn't my understanding of what a podcast awards should be about, I knew that people were defaulting to that understanding of a popular vote being a very important part of an awards ceremony. So I created one for the benefit of the enthusiasm that was clearly there. And in doing that, I really created, like, I'm not going to say I created a monster, but it definitely had the viral effect that I was hoping it would have.
Yeah, yeah.
And then some.
It's a great way to get more branding out, branding presence. I mean, even just from my circles of people that went and threw a vote in for my podcast, all those people didn't know that there was an Australian podcast awards at all. I mean, half of them probably didn't even listen to podcasts. And I'm still trying to convince them to listen to podcasts. And this was just another validation for them that there's something legitimate around podcasting in general, that maybe at some stage in the near future, they might finally take the plunge and listen to one, hopefully mine. But this is just another indicator on a multitude of angles, of levels. Like, it was good for me because it showed some legitimacy for my podcast, as I'm sure it was the same for others. But it was great for the longevity of Castaway and the podcast awards. I mean, depending on what your vision is long-term with what you want to do with it.
Well, you touch on something there that also occurred to me quite a bit along the way, which is I was coming from a point of view of like, this is your endeavor. You've got to do a good job because people are, you know, because you've stuck your neck out like this, you put yourself out there and, you know, you need to deliver. But you just touched on something about how it became visible to thousands of people all over the world because of the popular vote. So at some point, something else took over, which is the understanding that I am, even though I'm not the ABC, even though I'm not representative of an arts organization that's got ties to the government, maybe I will be in the future. I hope so, because that means that I'll be getting financially supported. but for now, I realized that I responded to that by saying, okay, people, you're not just Dave Gertler doing this podcast awards thing. You are the Australian Podcast Awards. And you're representing the Australian podcast community. So there was...
Was that a big moment when that sort of sunk in? You went, oh, shit. Like, I don't know if it's a good thing or not. That's a lot of pressure.
Look, it was a good thing that I wasn't working full time at the same time because I basically said, okay, well, I'm going to substitute for that by just giving shitloads of my time. Like, I'm only one person, but if I can do the work of a small group of people, then, you know, I'll do a job that justifies the NOMA of the Australian Podcast Awards. Yeah. It's definitely not NOMA.
It sounds
good. But it's not, it's the opposite of misnomer.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll use NOMA for that.
Yeah. Pro-NOMA.
It definitely has sparked something, at least from my perspective, and going back to what I said before about even with my background being music and you spend years trying to convince people to listen to your band over other bands and sharing songs and watching video clips and whatnot, but there's an awareness of what music is and what a band is and whatnot. And podcasts have been around for quite a few years, but when you compare it to the United States and how big podcasting is there compared to here, I mean, there's a population difference, but I still think overall in Australia, it's relatively, I wouldn't say unknown, but it's just not that visible at the moment. But sharing the popular vote around for the podcast awards and just showing that there's something there that looks official, suddenly people are going, oh, I've heard the name get thrown around. And to be honest, I was the same a few years ago before I started doing podcasting. I thought, oh, podcast is that weird word that the ABC always used to mention at the end of a TV show. They say, oh, also available as a podcast. And you go, oh, that doesn't sound very exciting. But I think a lot of people are going through that phase now where they're suddenly going, it's a lot more visible. There's something legitimate about it. And a lot of people are starting to talk about it. And I've got people that are saying to me now, I'm thinking about starting up my own podcast. That's good and bad because it can create a lot of shit out there, but it also brings a lot more popularity and a lot more listenership to the format. So it's quite exciting. And I think whether you've consciously aimed the podcast awards and the concept to push it in that direction, I mean, it's certainly working anyway.
Look, I mean, I wasn't going to take responsibility for the flourishing state of the Australian podcasting community, but if Andy and the Andy Social community want to give me that credit, then I'm more than happy to take it. No. Look, I'm only harnessing the energy that's already there. From the start, people have been egging me on because people realize that a podcast awards is good for the community. And all I can really hope is that it does have a positive effect. And I think regardless of whether I failed or the whole event was a complete catastrophe, you're right. People just knowing that there's a podcast awards is providing a bit of stability and a feeling of a bit of infrastructure that and that kind of is the core of what I thought, why I thought I'd be good at doing the awards, because I do like the idea of giving people something to aspire towards. And I also have a musical background as well. I'm a bass player. We should have a...
Hey, there we go.
I sold my electric basses over the years, but I've still got like a nice acoustic bass upstairs. If you want to have a jam after this. But yeah, I like the idea of being a musician and writing a song that gets critically recognized as being a good song. So I think that was ingrained in my DNA many years ago. So it does make sense to me, the idea of doing an awards and having it be something that leads to good outcomes.
And I think at least from my point of view, I think the thing that's going to really solidify this whole brand that you've created is going to be it being there consistently year after year now. So you don't want to overwhelm yourself and put too much pressure on, but, you know, having it in consecutive years for the next 2, 3, 4, 5, et cetera years, that will help legitimize that branding, the podcast awards itself, even further. I think you'll find that it'll accelerate. looking back with the music background, especially sort of that Australian metal scene, we've had attempts of doing Australian Metal Awards over the years, and you have the first event and it goes reasonably well and a lot of people jump on board, but then they're never back for round two. They're never back for the second year. And so each time someone's attempted to go and try it again and get it jump-started, the crowd or the audience out there are a lot more critical and a lot more reluctant to support it because they believe it's a one-hit wonder. So for you, I think, at least from my, just with those experiences in the back of my mind, year two and three and four, at least those first few years will be quite crucial. And I think you'll find that there'll be an accelerated a volume of awareness that'll come to it.
Well, now that, you know, in that sense, if the first event was a catastrophe, it would have been hard to say confidently that I'm going to back it up.
Yeah.
unless my tagline was like, well, it couldn't be any worse. but the event was as far as I am concerned, it was a good event, and everyone enjoyed it. A lot of people came from outside of Sydney, and I don't think anyone really regretted coming, regardless of whether they won or didn't win or whatever. Totally forgot what I was saying.
About consistency year after year. But
yeah.
That's all right. I'll pick it up.
Yeah, thanks. Because, sorry, I usually can string a couple of thoughts together, but... Oh, yeah. No, this is it. The second thing is, the thing for me now, I've realized now that the dust is settling and I'm still closing things off on the first year, and I'm not complaining. I'm not saying this in the burden of this, but I'm kind of like, I'm exhausted from the first year. And even though I'm still doing stuff and I've just started to think about the second year. And I know that what will be crucial will be bringing on the support of whether it's a corporate entity or whether it's a government entity. The next stage for me is about saying, well, listen, this is the movement that we've created. This is what we look like as a community. This is the enthusiasm that I managed to muster as just one person. So podcasting is a really, really important and forward-thinking community of people and medium that is just, you know, it just needs to be supported.
Yeah.
And it's being supported by the ABC in that they're pumping a lot of time and a lot of money, a lot of people, a lot of good people into their offerings. And also into, I think, innovating a new platform.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's clear that it's worthwhile. So now it's just about... you know, to be specific, I'm hoping to attract some kind of government grant. But the thing is that podcasting doesn't quite fit in with, it's not the Australia Council for the Arts, because we're not putting bloody murals up. We're not putting on an arts festival. Yeah. But it is, you know, and everyone who understands podcasting knows that it's such a... rich form of expression and it's such an important pastime for listeners.
Yep.
It's a huge part of their life and it's part of the media. So, you know, but it doesn't quite fit in with the Walkleys and the journalist awards either. And there's elements of it that are, that splinter off into the business world, but it's not about to get like a innovations grant from the government. So, I think it's about emphasizing the community aspect of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, anyway. rant over.
Well, it's the challenge, but it's also the benefit of what podcasting is. I mean, if you looked at all the categories that you had for voting, you realize, like, genre-based, how many different types of podcasts are out there. I mean, having, you know, entertainment, comedy, business, and then also, like, storytelling. That format I didn't even really quite grasp until really on the night and watching watching the live podcast, but also just getting an understanding of the other nominees and the winner as well. And it just showed that there was another color to podcasting, and it's already this multicolored sort of, I mean, if I'm using some sort of visual here.
No, that's cool.
There's just so many different aspects of, it's not like painting, I mean, or writing or, I guess it is. I mean, anyway, I could be going down a tangent that I can't get out of, or a rabbit hole I can't get out of, but podcasting just seems to be quite varied, and that might be a difficulty or a challenge as to, as you said, trying to pigeonhole it into something existing that the ABC's created.
Yeah, true. And but I guess that has just as many pros as cons in terms of, like you were talking about the medal awards before. You know, that people perceive that as a one-hit wonder, and it was hard to sustain the energy around that. Maybe, you know, to that might have something to do with the narrowness of it's just one music genre.
Yeah.
Whereas, like you were saying, and sorry, I don't mean to say the word just one music. Metal is, and I've got to say, I've done a lot of work with music people, and, you know, I've come into contact with a lot of metal heads. I've never met one that isn't just a really lovely person. It's so funny. Like,
we break the stereotype.
Because the music is all about kind of this aggression.
Yeah.
And you know, and often that, you know, borders on to, like, role playing, like, psychopathic sort of tones, and but then the people are just lovely. Like, it's really funny. Just goes to show that, yeah, that, you know, looks aren't everything.
But I think that might be your benefit, is that it is multi-genred.
Yeah.
With that medium, and it gives you a lot more options to push.
And there are so many stakeholders in podcasting.
Yeah.
And people have said to me, Dave, it's so difficult for you to, like, put everyone together, because shouldn't the radio people be separate from the independent podcast people and judged separately and awarded separately? And, you know, I just think right now it's not about separating things out. I think we need to, as much as possible, bring people together and integrate different scenes together, rather than sort of try and acknowledge boundaries that don't really need to be there.
I mean, we see that in music when you talk about local bands versus international bands, and an international band is always perceived as being better than the local band, which is not very very often, not often being the case. And and I think it's fantastic that you can be an independent podcaster, using that term, and be nominated or put into the mix or into the conversation with what could be perceived as a mainstream or, you know, a professional podcast run by an organization. And I think that's, I think the benefits of that far outweigh the negative aspects. I mean, the competition might be a lot harder, but I think, or at least from my point of view, submitting my entry is not so much to win, it's to be in the conversation.
Yeah.
It's so you can then go out to your peer group, and then you can be in that conversation where, I mean, I think we all want the same thing. We all want more listeners.
Yeah.
The accolades and the acknowledgement in that final winning category is great, and it's a bonus on top. But to be able to be, I mean, for me, like, to go on the night and not be one of those finalists, I was so excited to be there because I was part of it. I was part of that. It was a networking opportunity, and I knew that I was already in the conversation and that my podcast was still being listened to and in the conversation with other people that are doing amazing things. So, I mean, maybe it's a glass half full mentality. I don't know, but it's there's a lot of benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't you know, I'm trying to sort of cherry pick the positives of running a competition like this, and also I have a tendency to downplay the negatives, because there has been, you know, that the attitude that you just expressed of just being happy to be a part of it and happy that it's happening and really enthusiastic about participating and curious to know how you did and how you can improve and what the judging panel had to say was how most people were.
Yeah.
And then there were other people who were also like, they had that, but they also had a really like a bit of an edge. Like,
yeah. Okay.
They really, and that was a discovery. That was a revelation to me about how seriously people do take their podcasts. And that's a great thing. Mm. I'm not gonna, I don't discount that at all. But I guess my point is that if you take on the role of doing an awards or a competition of some sort, you have to be prepared to take it as seriously as the most serious of serious people are going to take it.
You're going to get a wide range of people of varying levels of passion.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, it's managing that, but I think it'd be difficult for you, because no doubt you'd have to keep somewhat of a neutral position on the whole thing, and being very careful with how you articulate things, how you refer to things, and highlighting particular people and podcasts. And as you said, most people probably wouldn't worry or care and just be happy to be involved, but there'd be particular people that are reading into things and looking for opportunities to be, I guess, critical of the process.
Yeah. You know, I think that some people are naturally geared towards offering their feedback when you put...
We thought that might happen.
Yeah. Chachi, come on. Shh. Hey. Sorry. Skateboarders. Come here. Come here. I'm actually very surprised that Chachi was so quiet up until now.
You're very well behaved.
Yeah. Good boy, Chachi. Stay there. but I did lose my train of thought, which shouldn't be a surprise to anyone at this point.
the critical, I guess, audience out there that are looking for reasons to, I guess, highlight their criticism.
Yeah, I found it was definitely the exception to the rule.
Yeah.
I was much more overwhelmed by the volume of people who were just very forgiving and accepting and encouraging.
Yeah.
But I will say that there were some times when I was a little bit, conflicted about what my role is at certain points. Like, when the awards were approaching and there were some finalists who weren't able to make it, and I happen to know that they're going to win, but I don't want to tell them. Should I just tell them? Because otherwise they're going to miss the event and, you know, they're going to miss that big moment. And on the other hand, if there are some finalists who wanted to come or weren't able to come, but I knew that they weren't going to win, do I still encourage them to come? I mean, it's just all...
yeah.
It's just
The consequences of taking any of those options, you know, and what are the consequences of being honest in that aspect?
The main problem that I had with being honest about it was that I was worrying that it would spoil the fun for everyone who was there on the night.
Yeah.
That became a serious concern for me. I mean, I put so much time and effort and money and so not just me, but a lot of people put a lot of time, effort, and money into making the event like as awesome as we could. So imagine if we turned up on the night and half the people in the room knew who were going to win half of the awards. The whole point of what I was doing was if you look for the Find It Style It podcast, they won the industry focus category, which is going to be renamed to something that makes more grammatical sense next year, like professional focus. But anyway, their moment of delight on their faces that they filmed and shared with everyone on all their different social media platforms, that moment was the reason that I did the awards.
Yeah,
and I'm so happy that they filmed that and that they were there to experience that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that's another example of just the pros far outweighing any of the cons.
Did you counteract that situation where you had particular finalists who couldn't make it? Were you getting people just to put together acceptance speeches or videos or whatever on the basis that if you do win, there is something there? So you're sort of preparing them, or is that something?
Yeah, I blanket emailed all of the finalists, and there was a section in the email, like I emailed all of the finalists saying, here's what you need to know. And there was a heading for, if you can make it, here's what's going to happen.
Yep.
If you can't make it, here's what you need to do.
Yep.
And I actually created another submittable form for them, for all the finalists, so that they could upload their artwork in case it had changed since they did the first submission, so that they could stipulate exactly who was to be credited in the event that they won. The event itself, I had a real focus on, sorry, Chachi, I just touched my dog in a place that I wouldn't have touched him if I was looking. if there's one criticism that I received from the event itself, and I'm totally happy to receive it, this particular, and I agree with it, is that there wasn't enough recognition of not just the winners, but the finalists as well.
Okay. Yep.
They just had their names read out.
Yeah, okay.
And I wanted to do more, but one of the things, I had limitations on budget because I was paying someone to make those graphics. I had limitations on time in terms of the lead up to the event, and I had to focus on selling as many tickets as I could, because otherwise I was going to be thousands of dollars in debt.
Yeah.
Right. So there were just compromises that I literally had to go, okay, you're going to have to shortchange, in a certain way, certain, stakeholders in this event. Those were interesting, decisions to make, but at the same time, the overwhelming feedback I got from the event on the night and afterwards, Chachi. Sorry, Chachi wasn't. Chachi, we're talking about positive feedback.
He's getting excited.
Chachi, come here. Was the length of the night, the duration of the night.
Yep.
The fast-pacedness of it. I've never really been to any awards ceremonies. I watch the Oscars, the Logies. Actually, I've never watched the Logies, but you see the Logies and you see that in the Brownlows and all the sporting events, everyone just gets hammered and it takes 12 hours.
That's it.
Right? So the one thing that I worked on as a priority was that so many people are coming from out of town. Everyone's paid a decent amount of money to be there.
Yeah.
You want to make the most of the networking opportunities. So most people just said the best thing about it, one of the best things about it, was that it was a short night.
Yeah.
Like the awards ceremony was short and sweet. And so, you know, I take those two pieces of feedback they kind of work against each other. So if there was a lot of focus on the finalists and everything, then it would have been a much longer night.
Yeah, yeah. So it's that's the big takeaway I saw from it, from going to the awards night, was being left in the courtyard to begin with and not being able to go into the main room. So everyone was not negatively forced, but everyone was in a condensed space and you're sort of forced to start turning around and smiling to people and going, oh, hey. And then and then you had the stickers as well so people could see who's a podcaster.
Yeah.
And that sort of sparked some conversation. And by the time they opened the doors to the main room to walk in, there had already been some alliances built up between people. I met a few people from other podcasts and we started getting chatting. So we sat together. And
you guys had a great chat with Maynard on the red carpet.
Oh, yeah.
Yourself and the guys from The Struggle and Cullum.
Yes.
Yeah. That I haven't released that video yet. I'm gonna boost that one on Facebook.
Oh, well, you'll have to let me know. I'll put it in the show notes for this one. But it was really good. And it was just, it broke the ice and it got everyone in a good mood. And so when everyone sat down, because it wasn't, as you said, like the Brownlows or Grammys or Logies or all these big publicized awards nights where you're at like a large dining table when you're eating and drinking, but you're segregated in little areas, but you're forced to sit there. You had that opportunity to really mingle, and then you're sitting in rows.
Mm.
And then that whole awards schedule or process of going through the categories and the finals and whatnot, and then having the intermission as well. It was fast paced, but it was good because it kept everyone's attention. It kept things fresh and people weren't sort of eyes wandering off or looking at the time or anything like that. And everyone was still, I think just the setup was really good.
Yeah.
And I think that balance between keeping things short and sweet, but also acknowledging people, it's just maximizing the time and the focus as to where you put it.
Yeah. And you know, I got that from being at the OzPod conference last year, which was the conference for podcasting that the ABC put on in Sydney. It was an all-day panel event, panel discussions, and in between there were like 15-minute breaks where we ate and mingled. And the best part for me and a lot of people, I think, and the overwhelming majority that I think they of feedback that they got was that the most value we got from being there was by meeting each other.
Mm. There's those little breaks in between.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then we were always being herded back in. So we didn't get to really embellish that and really make those contacts until the end of the night when everyone was sort of, there was like a cocktail event and, you know, that was great as well. But that was the end of the night and people were sort of had to go back to their homes and stuff. Mm-hmm. I was definitely learnt from that day, okay, any podcasting event really in Australia should have a focus on networking. It just needs to just be because we're just getting to know each other. Where these events are new, we haven't really worked out in a good way who we are as a community. Yep. We're still getting to know each other and we need to keep getting to know each other. And I think next year for the Castaway Awards, I'd like to even, you know, have satellite events where people who are in Sydney can just meet up. And we did that this year. There was a night before, you know, we went and met up, a few people who were coming from out of town met up at a pub.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that there will be more podcasting events happening. Even this, you coming around to my place in Zetland, in some, I don't know, odd industrial cement town that I live in, you know, from your home in on the south coast.
Yeah, down south coast, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is a networking podcast event in a sense.
It is, yeah.
So I like what you were saying before about how your goal is to go around and meet other podcasters and record episodes with them. And, you know, that's just as much about community as it is what I was doing is about community.
Absolutely. So. I mean, it's the same with music. And I mentioned this before as a comparison, when you first start out as a musician or a solo artist or in a band, you're trying to find as many people to lean against and build alliances with, cross promotion, getting people to come to each other's events, finding ways to get your name out there to not only your core audience, but the audience of others that are doing similar things to you. And to be able to do podcasting, it sort of brought me back to those earlier beginnings where you did a little bit of hustle and the networking was such a huge emphasis on what you did to, and it really sort of equated to what the success was of what you were doing. So the way that the awards night was set out with that whole semi-forced courtyard where people weren't able to go anywhere. And I think it was, I mean, it was great because you had this
tiny- You make it sound like there's an OHS issue.
this fire
hazard. We were all crammed into this small space. No one could get out. They wouldn't open any of the doors and we had to all talk to each other.
Yeah, pretty much. No, it was just set up in such a- It was a very casual thing as well.
Yeah.
I think whether that was a conscious thing or not, and some of the awards nights, I think when people think of awards nights, they think of a formal event,
yeah.
A gala or something of a sense. But this was very casual. There was, for me, being a beer drinker, I was very happy with the beer selection. That was fantastic. Eyes lit up when I saw the beer menu. I'm like, oh, yes. And just getting out there and talking to people, and it was just a relaxed atmosphere. A lot of people, a lot of buzz, but it was that casualness to it all where people weren't sort of rigid and trying to maintain some form of professionalism. There were extremes to that where people took that maybe a little bit too far because they certainly indulged quite a bit probably before they even got to the awards.
Yeah, I didn't really notice any outlandish...
But it was pretty good. It was pretty good. It was that casual networking environment that I think is probably understated quite a bit.
Yeah, well, because I've never organized anything like that before, that was what you're sort of talking about is sort of a reflection on just basically my rule of thumb was, well, whenever you don't know what to do, just try and make it something that you would want to come to, you know? Yeah, I mean, the whole way through the Castaway Awards, it was always about me trying to do something that I would enjoy and that I would want to participate in. So, look, I mean, the event was catered by Burke Street Bakery.
Yeah, that was really good.
They're one of my favorite cafes. They're just a great cafe that exists, like there's 6 or 7 of them in Sydney. Pretty much anyone who lives in Sydney knows about Burke Street Bakery. Mm. And so, you know, that's the catering sorted. It was affordable. And, you know, and I had my friends being the actual people who were serving food.
I was going to ask you about the volunteers. So on that note, was it all friends that you got on board? Did you have to do a bit of wheeling and dealing to get some enthusiasm and motivation? Because volunteering can be quite a difficult thing.
There was a core team of people that made the event itself possible, as in by saving me tens of thousands of dollars so that I didn't have to pay for their services. One of them was a girl called Stephanie O'Brien. You would have seen her ushering people onto the red carpet on the night and also ushering people up on stage. Mm. She was a lot more than just a stage manager or a, you know, red carpet manager. She was a marketing consultant for me for the last 2 or 3 months before the event itself. She helped with a lot of the business decisions. She was just a potential Airbnb guest of my place here.
Right.
That ultimately chose not to stay here. I won't ask why, but a couple of months after, she's on this trip in Australia and New Zealand from America, like for a year, and she contacted me saying that she really liked the idea of these podcast awards that I was organizing. She wanted to offer her experience and expertise just as a volunteer. So having someone like that really just, you know.
So valuable.
It was incredible. It literally couldn't have been any more valuable.
Yeah.
And she did it all for the experience, all for the feeling of helping out something that she thinks is a good idea. Mm. And she did it completely selflessly. And she continues to help me now. Mm. She's basically like an incredible ally.
Yeah.
So she was there as an advisor, as a creator. She helped create a lot of the newsletters that were going out. She helped with a lot of decisions, important decisions. And she did whatever she needed to do on the night. So she was crucial. Everyone else was friends, right?
You wouldn't pick it.
I have good friends.
You've got amazing friends. Because when one thing that I mean, obviously there was a casual vibe to it all, where it was a non-formal event in the sense of it being casual, but everyone walking around that was working all appeared to be hired guns or people provided by the venue. It had a professional vibe to it, where
there were people there who were paid by the venue.
Yeah,
the venue staff there were the people behind the bar.
Yep,
and the people at the guy at the door who was like letting people in. Yeah. And obviously the stage, the tech people, light and sound. Yeah.
But everybody else, you wouldn't know. You wouldn't know that they were volunteers or friends of yours or anything as such. So it, at least from my point of view, gave off a vibe that this was all professionally hired.
Yeah.
And everybody was there from some business or company or agency or something like that, and we're getting paid by the hour. And I'm thinking, I don't know how the hell Dave afforded to do all this. Obviously, you know, tickets are sold and whatnot, but the expenses. So you did well. I mean, you got some amazing friends.
I do. Very, very selfless people. You know, I was talking about Stephanie and her contribution. The food was Bourke Street Bakery, yeah. But there was also allowances for people with special dietary requirements. Yeah. I wanted to do everything by the book. So in the part of the ticketing process was asking people if they had any disability needs that needs to be taken care of, and also if they had any vegetarian, vegan, gluten-free allergies and stuff like that. So I worked closely with another good friend of mine, Kirsty, who selflessly helped me coordinate all of the catering as well as cooking everything that would be to cater for everyone who had special dietary needs. And she did that for free. And she is a hired gun for other people.
Yeah.
And she actually was asked by people on the night if they can hire her in the future.
Really?
So, you know, she's, I think it was, you know, it really was good. Next year, I won't be able to ask everyone to do stuff for free, even though they probably would. But I think that, you know, that's one of the things you do when you're setting something up. Yeah. You just try and rally people behind you and harness all the goodwill that you can.
Be interesting to take another snapshot in 12, 18 months' time after year two's completed to see how you've approached that and the challenges that you've no doubt will probably have to take on as far as your ratio of paid people, hired people versus people that are going to be volunteering. Because I think a lot of people, I mean, I don't know about your circle of friends, but I think even just from a podcast community point of view, I think people can see the bigger picture. I think they can see the longevity of it, and they can see the benefits for Castaway, the podcast awards, but themselves individually as well. It gives them more of a platform to push their branding.
Sorry about that. I'll put him in.
And we're back. Dog has been given a nap.
Yes. We'll probably hear him distantly scratching on the door, but that's okay.
That's all right.
A little bit of animal cruelty goes a long way.
I can't remember what we were saying. Oh, we're talking about next year with the volunteers and that ratio between hired guns and...
Yeah, look. Look, I think it's not to give too much credit to myself, but I think it's no coincidence that I ended up somehow just almost basically breaking even.
Yeah.
after working on this thing for over a year and a couple months more than a year, there were so many variables in place. But every time someone asked me how am I funding this, I was sort of like, well, I don't have any money. So every time I really need something, I figure out how to fund it.
Mm.
So pretty much everything was done on the smell of an oily rag up until the actual event itself, which really did have to be funded.
Yeah, of course.
So what I'm saying is I have a knack for sort of estimating what things are going to cost and what's going to be, what resources need to go into something to make it happen. So talking about next year, I feel that the event itself will probably have to cost about twice as much because I'm not talking about the ticket price. the event itself will be, I won't be able to pull on the same. Well, I'm not planning on asking on everyone to do stuff for free.
Mm.
You know, I'd like to pay people for their contribution as much as I can. And if I was to actually pay for all those things, it would probably cost about twice as much as it did.
Yeah.
So then there's the, then there's the actual marketing of the event. If that is to be done in a more formalized way that doesn't just involve everything coming from my brain, that, you know, I will have to pay people for that, for their time. And then there's also me being paid, I guess, for my time, yep. I guess.
Yeah.
Because it was my full-time job for more or less 6 months. Now I have to work in another full-time job to sort of somehow get my head, you know, get myself back afloat. But I want to keep doing it, but I can't completely go broke again.
Yeah.
So
a few new challenges.
Yeah. It will be interesting to see what the business model of it is or how it's sort of developed in 12 months.
Yeah, absolutely. Thinking about some of the people that are in attendance, the people that submitted podcasts for categories to be nominated. And I guess you would have seen a lot of feedback from the judges as well. And I think just over the past 12 months or so of you communicating with a lot of podcasters and understanding who's out there and their shows and whatnot. In your opinion, what do you think is the biggest thing that Australian podcasters aren't doing? And it could be a very simple thing, like low-hanging fruit, so to speak.
This is another point where I need, like you mentioned before, about me with this role and needing to sound
neutral and
but it's a very interesting question.
Or you could, to take the pressure off a bit, from a community point of view, from Australian podcasters as a group, as a community, what's something that isn't being done as a collective that probably should be done, as far as maybe it's something to do with visibility or promotion or.
In this day and age, it's always good when I start a question, an answer with that, with those words. In this day and age, it almost feels like for something to break through into the mainstream, there needs to be a reality TV show about
it. Yeah, right. Okay. Interesting.
So I don't feel like it would be that out of place for there to be some kind of like, you know, splinter kind of maybe a little bit indie reality TV show on SBS or something to find the next podcast star. I've had this idea that maybe the next Castaway Awards will incorporate something like that.
Something a little bit behind the scenes reality based that builds towards a crescendo of.
But my point in saying that is perhaps a little bit of mainstream media coverage on particularly on TV,
yep,
would do wonders for getting the word out about podcasting and making it sort of more sexy to the wider Australian community.
Yep.
Like in the States, Marc Maron has a TV show.
Yep.
And so that legitimizes his podcast to a large degree. And he's also someone who's not backed by a major media organization. So he doesn't work for CBS or NBC or CNBC.
Yeah.
So I guess in Australia, it's understood that the ABC will produce high quality stuff and it will have a large audience. But it's still going to be an ABC thing. So maybe podcasting needs to have, and Hamish and Andy are always going to be Hamish and Andy from the radio station. So maybe there needs to be the emergence of a real, someone who's cut their teeth on the podcasting, medium.
Someone who's going to break the pack.
And then becomes famous for it.
That visual aspect could be a key element to that.
And yeah. And I guess taking a couple steps back to what are Australian podcasters not doing, I think that everyone's doing as much as we can. But in relation to what I was just talking about, I'm not saying that we should sell out and there should be like a famous celebrity podcaster and, you know, we should get that happening. But I do feel like my overall takeaway from not just from Castaway, but from being involved in the podcasting world and space for several years now is I think I've realized that the personality of the host is really, really, really important and that it comes across.
Yep.
Because when I think about all the podcasts that I always listen to, really that is that there's a direct line straight to my heart with the podcasts that are hosted by people whose personality really resonates with me, whether it's similar to mine or whether it's completely different to mine, in the same way that friends pop up out of nowhere and they become your friends and you become intrigued with them. I think there's a acknowledgement of that area of quality that maybe is missing.
Something where there needs to be some sort of, it's like almost like some sort of personal identifier to that person behind the podcast. Because I guess if someone looks at a podcast, even these conversational type things, the highlight is on the guest. And I guess the stigma around that is, and so it should be, it shouldn't be this ego platform for the host to talk too much and the guest is always secondary. And there's truth to that, but I guess, and I'm exactly the same, you know, there's podcasts that I've listened to, and if the host is just not connecting with me, the guest can be amazing, but I'll turn it off because I just can't stand the host and maybe the choice of words they use or the type of questions or the way that they just talk, maybe the sound of their voice grates on me. It could be something very petty, but it could just come down to their personality themselves. And maybe it's something where you personify the host in other ways, not so much on the podcast episodes itself, but in other ways where it's through this whole community management, social media, vlogging, trying other ways to personify. Yeah, absolutely. So you're not really changing what you're doing as far as the structure of your podcast itself, but it's everything that is connected to it.
Yeah. So I guess what you're saying is adding dimensions, sharing with your community, not just via the audio and the podcast medium, but backing that up with other stuff around it that increases that connection.
It might be a content thing, or it might just be educating people a little bit behind the person who's slapped this all together. Slapped it sounds for a lack of better term. I've just insulted so many podcasters out there.
Just slap together a podcast and
yeah, there we go. It's if for myself as an example, I've been fortunate because I've had the music background and I've leveraged off that through the band, and I've used that as a bit of a jump start to push the podcast. So a lot of my initial core listeners have come from fans of the band.
Yeah.
So that's helped me, and that's helped give my podcast some sort of identifying features around myself. But another tactic that I've tried, and this is a bit more of a comfort factor for me or a self-esteem thing, is I really made an emphasis initially to say, I'm an idiot. I don't know what I'm talking about. Half the time I'm asking dumb questions. Mm. Half the time I can't even string a sentence together. And I really like to improve on my conversational skills and get out there and talk to different people, not just people in my music circles, but really branch out there and get out of my comfort zone. And the podcast is a way of doing that. And I want you guys to come along on that journey with me.
Yeah.
And you can laugh as I stumble over things, but maybe you might learn something as well as me. Yeah. I'll do the hard yards and I'll have those sometimes awkward conversations with people. You don't have to worry about that. You can sit in and listen to it.
That's why I was really happy that's why I was really excited that you wanted to interview me for your podcast. because I think you do understand the balance between the host's voice and the guest voice, and I think you are a very honest person, and you're putting yourself out there, and you put out, like you said before, like you're not afraid to show some vulnerability.
Yeah,
that's something that that's a specific characteristic of podcasts that I like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is when the host is just has every now and then they just say something that's just like, far out, you just got balls for saying that, like, you know, and it's something that I feel, but I don't have the courage to say about myself.
Yeah. It's almost creating that story around the people that run it. So you could have co-hosts or whatever, and sometimes there's a backstory with those co-hosts and you know, you create that, whether it be visually or through other ways, through your website, your show notes, your social media, you're interacting with people. But maybe that's in one particular format of podcasting, because you can have the other end where it's highly slick and professional.
Yeah.
You've got guys that have come from radio, and I've got some friends that have done podcasts and they're from radio. And this isn't the struggle, by the way, but other people, and I can't listen to them. They're great people, great friends, but they've got the radio voice.
Mm.
They've edited the podcast in a way that's very slick. It's very polished and it works, but in a radio format, and it doesn't have that rawness that some podcasts have.
Mm.
And so the appeal for me is from a different angle as to somebody else, but then I can talk to other people that listen to podcasts and they're like, I cannot handle the conversational, sometimes off on tangents, rambling, long-winded, long format podcasts. They just do not appeal to me, and they will gravitate more towards the slick, condensed formatting of podcasts. And that's probably the wonders of what podcasting is all about.
Exactly. And I could learn a lot from the slick radio types, not just in terms of how I podcast, but in how I speak, because currently I just ramble all the time.
You and me both.
In everyday conversation and also on podcasts. But I could learn, you know, people from the independent DIY background can learn from the good things about radio broadcasters, and also radio broadcasters who podcast should and are, I think, learning from the medium of podcasting as a unique standalone thing.
They have to adjust in some way.
There are a lot of instances of radio people coming across to podcasting, especially in Australia. I think this might have something to do with the restructures at the ABC over the years.
Yep.
It does feel like they're just trying to recreate the radio experience.
Mm.
I won't say any more.
Yeah.
Yep. But I think that what will happen is they'll adjust and the independents will learn that you also really do have to put in some work.
Yes. Yes. I found that out very quickly. I'm like, oh, I have to actually think about this a little bit, not just turn on a mic, although it does sound like it sometimes. But I think that going back to what you said about the whole debate around, well, whether there's a debate or not, but having where you have a separation between mainstream and independent, or, you know, people that have got large backings and have got, you know, that sort of aspect of things. And this is where there's a true benefit to have the integration between those two circles, where everyone can learn off each other and everybody's got an opportunity to really sort of, in a way, be have to interact with each other. We're all in the same conversation and you're sort of forced in a way to be aware and pay attention to what other people are doing, regardless of whether you've got backing by a big organization or whether you've been on radio or whatnot, or whether you're just a long-haired muso that's just attempted to try and talk for an hour.
I think that the current state of the Australian podcast audience is such that everyone's got the same ability to subscribe or unsubscribe.
Yep.
Everyone's podcast is just as susceptible to being unsubscribed to for a range of reasons as it is searchable and discoverable. The big organizations have a big advantage in terms of discoverability.
Yep.
But everyone has the same ability to turn off listeners. And not just away from their podcast, but away from all podcasts, because Australian audiences are new to podcasting and they haven't yet built up a faith in podcasting that the hardcore fans know is just around the corner if they listen to the right podcast at the right time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Do you think there's going to be a big spike in visibility of podcasts over the next 12 months? Obviously there's plans and you've got, you're no doubt thinking about what next year's going to look like from a podcast awards point of view, but do you think there's going to be more visibility?
Well, the new S-Town show coming out of the States has got everyone talking in the same way that Serial did. It's made by the same people that made Serial.
Yeah.
So that could lead to a secondary wave of massive uptake of podcast listenership in the States, followed by, you know, a ripple effect here in Australia. So that could turn a lot of people onto podcasting. My mum, her listening to podcasts is happening a lot more. So that's a spike.
Look out.
Yeah. She's really into Phoebe's Fall, which won the storytelling documentary category. So there's that as well. I don't see any reason why there'll be massive spikes unless someone who's a TV exec out there hears this, maybe someone who also listened to your episode with Tony Barber and decides that they do want to take up my free advice that there should be a reality TV show about podcasters.
I'll have your contact details there so they can reach out.
You could be the... you could be the Osher Gunsberg.
Oh, look out. Yeah. Wow.
Because he's already got a job at another reality TV show.
Yes, that's right. Even though
he's a dedicated podcaster.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who was in the awards? He was entered in the awards.
He was. I did see him there. Yeah. Actually, I think that must be a good feeling for you when you looked at some of the people that were submitting podcasts.
Absolutely.
And I was quite surprised even just going through the popular vote submissions. And I'm like, wow, there's some big names that are in there.
Like Will Anderson said on his podcast that that his producer said to him, hey, you better start talking about the popular vote because you're being beaten by a whole lot of podcasts that no one's ever heard of.
Yeah, well, initially I'm like, oh, that's good. I'm doing better than Will Anderson.
Yeah.
This is great. And I thought, I hope he doesn't mention anything on his podcast because I'm going to be left in the dust. But, I mean, that must be a good feeling to know that
absolutely
there's people that are recognizing it.
Yeah, absolutely. That was from the very start. It's the same as when you express your enthusiasm about it, like when Daniel Olivares from Australian yep. Podcasters or Josh Liston from Australian Podcasters or any of the podcasters show their interest and you know, share with me that they think it's a good idea. It's the same, but it's kind of, I do get a feeling of validation, definitely.
Absolutely.
When yeah. you see a submission come in from SBS,
yep.
The ABC, even though they didn't end up submitting in the final thing, but yeah, and that sort of stuff, I realized that's not to do with me though. That's because it's an awards ceremony. You know, it's the same with the judges wanting to be judges. They were happy to do it, volunteer their time, not because I'm sure they don't hate me, but it wasn't because of anything special about me. I need to be aware that it's just the fact that I did set up the awards platform.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess the personal validation is there because you've had a concept, you've created the concept, and it's become a reality, and you've been given the thumbs up and the green light from people that are doing great things. And so, I think it'd be crazy for anybody not to have some personal
yeah.
validation and go, you know what, I'm doing something that's quite special, and there's a lot of future potential as well for it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think that's something that will kind of really hit me in a few months' time
yep.
when the first year is fully digested and the second year is now on the horizon.
Mm.
And I'll sort of notice the differences, I think, between
see how many submissions you get.
Look,
as
I've
well.
Look, we've already got like a dozen submissions for next year's awards. Right, I haven't even told anyone this, but I added a submission form for the 2018 podcast.
Actually,
awards.
I saw that the other day. I was having yeah. a quick flick through the website and I went, should I do this? I thought, no, I'm sure he'll know and I'll just wait for, because I think it said September is or
I don't remember putting any dates around anything.
I think you said later in the year or something like that. Yeah. But if you want to just let us know that you exist more or less, yeah. fill out this form. And I thought, oh, well, no, I won't do that. I'll leave it. But I thought, okay, that'd be interesting to see whether you've got people
yeah.
submitting.
Yeah, there's, I think from memory, there's like a dozen.
Yeah, well.
And that's good. That's really great because immediately that's a massive change from last year where I've had to email everyone individually and mm. I'll still have to do that. Yeah. But, you know, to have people coming to me is massive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely.
Oh, well, I think in roughly 12 months time post awards year number two, we'll yep. have to do a recap because I think no doubt there'll be a lot of changes and yeah. you know, a lot of differences in the approach and, mm. and even the results as well. So
mm.
I think, as you said, you're still digesting year one,
mm.
so it might be too early to learn about what the dramatic changes and formats and things like that, if any, but I'll be watching with a keen eye to see what comes out.
I am more than happy to book it in. Let's chat about, let's do a year two recap because it's great to talk to you about this stuff because I think you've been following the journey and part of the journey from the start.
Yep.
So it's good to be part of your journey as well. And
likewise,
I might come down to where you live and sit in your yeah. in your living room.
We'll do one down there.
And you can stop your dog if you have a dog.
No, but I'm, no? Oh, actually, no, I don't have a dog.
You
no.
might by then.
Yeah,
I can bring my dog.
Oh, please. My wife will just... She'll love that.
Oh, and okay.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I don't want to encourage that.
Well, I'm sure that, you know, at least it's good to know that he'll be welcome there.
He will. He will, absolutely. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me. And we'll catch up in 12 months.
Definitely.
Thanks, everyone. Hope you enjoyed that chat with Dave. If you want to reach out to Dave and say hello, all of his contact information, websites, links, resources, everything will be over at andysocial.net in the show notes. Thanks once again to Dave, and I'm extremely psyched to see what he's going to do for next year's podcast awards year two. And as I said before, podcasts are getting more and more popular. And I must say, for anybody that's listening that isn't a podcaster, if you do feel inclined to give it a shot and you're not sure how to do it, by all means, reach out. If you want to reach out to me, you can, but I would also encourage you to reach out to David or look at some of the communities that are online on Facebook. There's a lot of people out there. There's a lot of great tutorials and resources, and it's not as hard as you think. Trust me, if I can do it, anybody can do it. Believe me. All right, before we wrap this up, very quickly, if you want to support the podcast, you can share this episode and all the other episodes either via my website or on YouTube or the iTunes links. Maybe there's a particular guest or a topic that I've covered in the past that might be of interest to a friend or a family member that you know. That's a great way to introduce somebody to my podcast or maybe just a podcast in general. So that's a great way to support the Andy Social Podcast. On top of that, you can do the usual social media yaya by, you know, liking, tagging, sharing, retweeting, all that sort of stuff goes a long way. You'd be amazed at what that can do with a few clicks of a mouse or taps of your thumb. Also rate and review on Apple Podcasts if you wish. And if you shop on Amazon, you can go to the Amazon portal link on my website, andysocial.net. And by clicking on that link, what that does is you shop on Amazon as per normal, but what I get is a small percentage of what you purchase. And that tiny, 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 tiny little bit of money goes towards some of the costs that I pay for each and every month to run this podcast. So it's very cool when I see a couple of dollars here and there come in, and it means a hell of a lot. And it's just a little bonus. It's a lot of fun. This podcast is a labor of love, and I'm not here to make any money, but when that happens, it's pretty cool. So thank you so much to those people that loyally faithfully in supporting me by shopping via that Amazon portal link. Oh, God, I need to wrap this up. All right, guys, I'm going to be back next week. I've got heaps and heaps of episodes coming up, lots of guests. I have recorded this episode a little way in advance. I'm about to go overseas very shortly, so I'm hoping I'm going to have some really, really cool and interesting people from that trip on the podcast. But I have a long list of episodes coming up, lots and lots of cool people. In the meantime, if you want to keep scratching that itch, go back and listen to some of the previous guests that I've had on the podcast as well. Lots of great stuff there. And as I've said in the past, please reach out and say hello to some of these people that I've had on. Let them know that you enjoyed the chat. These people spend or take a lot of time out of their busy days to chat with me and appear on the podcast. And it means a hell of a lot to me. And I'm hoping that you guys get a lot out of it as well. So make sure you say hello to these people and let them know what you think. All right, guys, that's enough. I'll be back next week with another episode of the Andy Social Podcast. Ta-ta. You're ready, you're